This Choircast podcast is brought to you by Theological Musings, Collected Essays of a Tattooed Theologian, Volume 2, by Dylan Neighbor Cruz. This collection explores contemporary social and political topics through a progressive, theological, and permaculture-infused lens. It also explores topics of theology and biblical studies so that lay people understand what theologians and biblical scholars do in the academic realm. From Choir Publishing, November 5th.
Hey, heathens, you're listening to the Deadly Faith Podcast, where religion and crime collide. I'm Lola.
And I'm Lacey.
And this shit is crazed, part two.
The mind that was in Jesus, that mind is in me.
Without me, life has no meaning.
Why would God tell you what I'm thinking and tell you what I've said to my wife or my husband when you're not around? It's because I'm the pastor of the church and I need to know.
This is the only place where you can see truth.
Dun, dun, dun.
Did I leave you hanging?
Yes.
Are you hating me? Are you loving it? Are you excited for the closing of loops today?
I'm excited for the closing of the loops, but I'm not excited about what's probably going to happen because we haven't gotten to the murder and you gave us a trigger warning of murder. But I will tell you that the one thing that has been on my mind for, I'm sure everybody listening to this for the last week, thankfully for me, it's only been the last 24 hours, is that he shit on her.
Yeah.
I still can't get over that he shit on her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I needed everybody to know that I have been living with that.
I was able to let it go a little easier.
So was he on her.
That was really good.
That was
it was
good.
Bad, but it was good. That was a good joke.
Thanks. I tried.
Well, before we get into the rest of it, and I will go over the trigger warnings one more time for you. So before we get into that, we have a message for you. Hey, heathens. Lacey and I love jewelry, especially when it's ethical and beautiful and lets you track a real-life wild animal. You heard that right. With follow bracelets, you can pick an actual animal to track with the bracelet of your choice. The bracelet comes with a QR code where you can easily track the movements of said chosen wildlife. The best part is that every purchase directly benefits organizations that save wildlife. Follow has given our listeners a generous offer for your next purchase. Go to myfollow.com, that's myfahlo.com, and use the code LACYBEAN20 to get 20% off your purchase today. That's LACYBEAN20. Now back to the show. Trigger warnings are murder, cult dynamics, domestic abuse, bathroom kinks, non-consensual sex, and human sacrifice. All right, so I left you off with the whole, we've entered cult territory. People are moved in with them. They've like created this home, this really welcoming atmosphere for people that have left the other church because they're all going astray and letting women lead.
The disgrace.
Can you believe it?
The disgrace.
The witches. So anyway, it wasn't an all at once like big move in.
Uh-huh.
It was just over a period of time. They all slowly moved in or moved like near them. So very close.
Yeah. But that's pretty typical with a cult is like it's not a night and day difference. Like it's not like one day you're in a cult and the next day, like the day before you weren't. It's a very slow brainwashing. Mm-hmm. So, it makes sense that they would be like a slow move-in period.
Yes. And I have something that's just, I know it was meant as like an endearing thing, but Jeffrey and Alice were referred to as mom and dad by everyone in the house, adults included.
I don't like that. Ew. Yeah. Don't like that.
On Kevin's interview where he talks about this, he's talking about it in a very familial, loving type of term. But when you know everything underlying it and you know what comes after, it just taints the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I don't like it. And I speak from, because it's too familiar for me. It reminds me of when I was in a cult, the pastor and his wife were very much like looked to as our parents or our spiritual
parents.
As mom
and dad of the church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I told them when I left, like one of the things that made me realize like something is not right here is like anytime I would do something wrong, and I'm using quotations because I wasn't doing anything wrong, but to them it was something that was wrong. I was always worried more about what they thought than like God or Jesus. And I was like, that's kind of fucked up. Like, I'm putting you guys above God, and pretty sure there's a Bible verse against that, or a Ten Commandments.
See, and if you are listening to this and you're like, I'm not in a cult, I go to church, but I'm not in a cult, do you care what your pastor thinks of you? Do you like care about it maybe more than what God thinks of you?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's your first clue in.
Yeah. Not saying that everyone's in a cult. Not saying your church is a cult.
I'm sure that there is.
But there's some questions that you should ask yourself.
Yeah.
And if this is sounding too familiar.
Czechoslovakia before you Czechoslovakia. You know what I'm saying? I'm so sorry. Anyway, so Jeffrey is now implementing rules for the house.
Oh, yes.
We knew rules were coming.
Yes,
so
we did.
He discouraged the group when it came to communicating with friends and family.
Oh,
going so far
God.
As telling them. I know, the first peak of isolation.
That is like red flag numero uno. That's like the biggest of red flags when it comes to cult practices. Excommunicate
Going so far as to even telling them that these people hate them now.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And like, since they've chosen this new life with him, they are against them. You know, people think you're evil now. They won't want anything to do with you. You couldn't make phone calls unless it was his idea. And if it was, the calls were monitored by him.
Oh gosh. Poor people.
If you went off and tried to do your own thing, and I mean, it could be like the simplest thing. You went to the grocery store, whatever. He just acted like it was the biggest betrayal. It was
Oh my God.
A breach of trust. Yeah, you would be humiliated and chastised for it. You had to ask permission for everything.
No.
So not only that, but now we're getting into like toxic group dynamics. People are trying to get in Jeffrey's favor. So they're telling on each other. They're tattletelling. We have adults tattletelling.
Oh my God. We learned about how not to do that in like pre-K, guys.
Yeah. Well, and they're just doing, it's for such little things, like things that literally don't matter, but that Jeffrey thinks matters. So he's also demanding that all the members hand him their full paychecks to tithe to his cause for the rebellion.
Okay. I don't like that.
And because he believes that he's the voice of God on earth, here to restore the church and the scriptures, this is justified.
Of course.
They do it.
Of course.
They, at least some of, majority of them do, I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
Majority do.
Because if he's the prophet, you know, it's like they're giving their money to God in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a very convoluted way, but in a way.
It's weird that he needs money because in 87, he's actually fired from the temple for stealing.
Oh, shit.
It's
we
weird
didn't
that
see
he
that
needs
coming.
His followers' money.
We did yeah. not see that coming. How much did he steal? Do we know?
Between $17,000 and $21,000 was stolen.
That's a good chunk.
Where should it go?
I don't feel bad for them at all because you know what? They knew.
Mm-hmm.
That he was not a good person to put in this position, and yet they did it anyways. So
they did it, yeah.
Their fault.
So Jeffrey, he's like, whatever, I'm going to do my own thing, fine. And he buys a 5-bedroom home on 15 acres of land for his cult.
How the fuck is this guy buying all these houses?
I still don't understand the loan process here, but
I really don't either. And that's the problem with my brain is I always need to go 5 steps deeper and I need to stop. But, you know, I'm curious.
So at this point, he's got everybody with him mm-hmm. still. So they've moved with him
okay.
to this place. So they were with them at the apartment. Now they have moved to this place.
So they have their official commune.
They do. Yeah. Yeah. And this is in Kirtland, Ohio. I just want to reiterate. That we're in Kirtland, Ohio.
Okay.
Because I'm not sure if I said that this house is in Kirtland, Ohio. And after they move there and they get settled, he starts preaching to them for hours. So, you know, before it was like a classroom discussion type thing. It's moved to he's now just preaching at them for hours at a time.
Ugh.
You couldn't leave the room. He didn't want you to even get up to use the bathroom. He, you know, like... didn't matter.
That's like, oh shit, what was the name? What was the name of the church with what's his name? And they beat him to death. Him and his...
Oh, my God.
What is his... I'm going blank. We covered this case. I'm going to look it up. But it reminds me of their church services because they would go on for hours and hours and hours. I'll remember it.
Yeah.
You can keep going.
And Jeffrey was still making wild claims while reading all of that information with chiasm. So it's still out of context. It's all willy-nilly, drawing lines between words that mean totally different things and calling them the same thing.
That's just weird.
It's hard to follow the train of thought.
Yeah.
He also coins a new name for himself besides Dad Prophet. Now he wants to be called the Destroyer. Mm. This sounds like a monster truck.
Yeah, it does.
Is this a monster truck name? Okay. I don't know. His sermons are becoming more and more along the lines of what he believes versus what God's word actually is or what the Book of Mormon has to say. So,
right.
But if you question his teachings or ask any questions, you're told to refrain, not just by him, but the other followers too. They'll be like,
don't
be asking questions. Don't do that. Don't humiliate him in front of people.
That's fucked up.
And it got worse though, because they did have a couple of members that were like, they asked questions. It was just harmless questions though.
It's natural.
It wasn't a pushback on him necessarily. It wasn't challenging him outright or anything like that. It was just genuine curiosity.
Or like, can you explain this a little more?
Yes.
Kind of questions.
And of course, he probably couldn't.
Of course.
And that's why he
pulled
it
out of his fucking dirty poo-poo ass.
Dirty poo-poo ass.
Yes. Also, his name was Lucas Leonard, and it was the Word of Life Christian Church. Yes.
Thank you.
I know. That was bugging me. I couldn't remember, but yes.
Yes. Okay. So it gets worse.
Yeah, of course, it gets worse.
He started bringing his pistol in the room. And before beginning his sermons, he would lay it down in front of the audience, having the barrel pointed towards the crowd, which was just a silent reminder or like a silent gesture. Don't question me. What I say is the law. What I say is life and death.
Oh, my God. That is so fucked up.
It's such a like a passive type of violence.
Yeah.
Is that
it's like
right
a passive aggressive
mm-hmm.
like act. It's not even like you're not even using words. It's like a passive aggressive act. Like I'm just going to set this here, but I'm also going to point it at you. So, you know, don't fuck with me.
I mean, this is real power and control that he's in the smallest little gesture, just like that. So,
yeah.
Not only that, there is now a punishment for questioning the prophet. You'll be sat in the middle of everyone while they verbally abuse you and accuse you for hours. You will be completely torn down by everyone, not just him, but all of your beloved, you know, congregation, all of your new friends and family. They're all gonna hurl accusations at you and verbally cut you down.
That the psychological trauma that you would go through from each time doing that is extensive. That's insane.
It makes you question yourself, you know?
Yeah.
Jeffrey, you know, he hates what the RLDS church has become. He's trying to get back to the old ways. He's trying to prove himself as a real prophet and come up with a plan for true atonement for the temple for his own people. Do you remember when I first told you about Mormon backstory, the blood atonement theory?
Yes.
And how there was no for sure documented acts of blood atonement.
Right.
Sorry to say.
Jeffrey.
He's planning a mass murder for
what the fuck?
The atonement of the temple. Because the temple is now run by elders that believe that women should be able to lead. They're going in a direction that he believes is not God's will. So he's going to cleanse.
Blood atone for their sins.
Yeah. So he wants to kill.
Oh, God.
He wants to kill everyone that lives around the temple by beheading them and taking over the Kirtland Temple. Specifically, this should all happen on May 1st so that it would be ready for Christ's return on May 3rd. I don't know how he got these dates.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Where did you pull up May 3rd? Also, beheading?
Yeah.
That is extreme.
I'm not sure why it needs to be this way, but he'll just go out in this field and he'll like meditate and be like, abracadabra. Oh. And decide that there's a new rule in place that God has bestowed upon him. I don't know what he's smoking, but
we need that on a shirt. Abracadabra, blah, 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 blah.
With the little hand gesture that I did to you. Yeah, you guys couldn't see it. I look like I'm add a little bit of spice, but the other way. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he thinks that Christ will return on May 3rd. I don't know where these dates come from. So he starts prepping the cult members, though. So he's starting to have them watch movies for preparation.
What movies?
I'm going to be honest. I haven't watched any of these, but I like looked up a little bit on them. So first movie is called Apocalypse Now.
Okay.
And the movie First Blood. They're very bloody. I wonder,
is he like trying to get them? This is his version of like learning warfare or like
kind of
battle tactics or something.
Kind of. He's also running them through like military drills as well.
Good God.
Because he's like, they're all going to come for us after this, you know?
Well, not shit, Sherlock.
So, and you know, he's been in the military, so he knows how military drills are done. And he's like very rigid about all of this. So,
oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
He tells the group, only 12 of our group will survive, like the 12 disciples. So now there's panic happening in the group because there are more than 12. And Kevin Curry, he's like, I have to go to work suddenly. And he left town and went into hiding for
ditto, Kevin.
A long time.
Fucking ditto.
And Kevin contacts the FBI and tells them everything that he knew about Jeffrey's plan. Good man. Very okay, good man,
snaps,
Kevin.
Kevin.
Kevin is featured on Evil Lives Here, the episode about Jeffrey Lundgren. It's in season 4. I think it's episode 2. But
we'll link it.
Like Kevin, he carries so much guilt about everything that happens after this. Even though he didn't participate, he says it's hard to move on and he feels like what he did was not enough.
Oh, that's sad.
I know. And like, I feel like he did more than enough contacting the fucking FBI.
He did. Yeah.
Like, I think you did all you could do, but he actually knew and befriended Jeffrey in the military and they have been lifelong friends since being in the service together.
Wow.
Kevin converted to Mormonism because of Jeff sharing the good news with him. And he said that Jeff and Alice spoke on scripture with like a lot of hope and it opened a door for him spiritually. And he said he felt like they were family. He loved them. He really did love them. So this was just a terrible situation for him. Very scary. So after he reports them to the FBI, one detective goes out to the house and asks some questions and it rattled Jeffrey a bit. So Jeffrey tells his followers, we can't do the plan right now. Let's wait. Let's wait on this.
I'm sorry. I understand I'm not a cop.
Yeah.
I am not an FBI agent. But what the fuck are you doing? You get told that there's going to be a mass murder.
And you send one person.
And you send one person to talk.
Yeah.
Like that, that's basically like telling them, hey, we know we're on to you. So like, change your game. Instead of, we'll know and we can monitor and track and be able to stop you. Like, I feel like it's just like giving them a heads up to change their plan.
Well, remember, this is the 80s.
Yeah, I know. But
things
still
were not as sophisticated as they are now. That was 40 years ago.
Thank you for calling me sophisticated. I really appreciate
it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so after he tells them, let's wait on the plan, Shar Olson, another one of the members, she leaves.
Uh-huh.
And she doesn't go quietly, though. How Kevin was like, I have to, goodbye, you know?
Yeah.
Shar is like, I'm leaving. Announces it to everyone proudly. She's like,
what
goodbye.
What are you doing?
You
no.
won't see me again. And
no.
she contacts the FBI. Oh, yeah. I mean, they couldn't do anything. She's like, goodbye. So, well, I don't know. Maybe it was the gumption. I'm not sure. But he didn't seem to like, I didn't hear anything on Jeffrey being fighting her specifically on this. So,
okay. Well, that's good. Cause you were like, she said, you'll never see me again. And I'm like, yeah, cause they gonna bury you.
Ah!
That's what I thought.
So she contacts the FBI too and tells him everything she knows, which is great.
Yeah. Good job.
Thank you, Shar.
For her too.
Yeah. Jeffrey is starting to lose control though. He feels it. He's got two people gone. He's scrambling to show that he still has power as a prophet and leader. So he focuses on the outcasts of the outcasts. So the outcasts of their group happen to be the Avery family.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So Dennis and Cheryl Avery, they have three daughters, and they lived in their own home that was nearby their house. They had followed Jeffrey and Alice from Independence, Missouri to Kirtland, Ohio. Mm-hmm. They didn't attend service as frequently as the other members because they had their own life. They were very involved with like their kids' activities and stuff. You know, he worked outside of the house. Cheryl was a take charge woman. She was very much in charge of all of their schedules and everything they did as a family. And because of this, Jeffrey tells the other cult members that they are being led away by Satan. They are evil people. He specifically is like, she should not be leading their house. He is a weak man. He lets a woman lead over him. They are insubordinate. They are uncontrollable and they question leadership. They're not as dedicated as the rest of us. We just can't have that. Can't have it.
Oh my gosh.
He talks about this several times. This is not like a one time he brings it up. Over and over, consistently. Anytime that the Averys are not there, he's talking about it. He's getting everybody on board. It's like, they're just not as good as us. They're not dedicated. They are being led astray by Satan.
Where this is going.
But no worries. Jeffrey assures them that this is actually a blessing to be thankful for. That God has provided them a lamb for the slaughter.
No. No.
So.
No.
Let me explain. He has pivoted from the blood atonement being the temple and the like neighboring people for the temple instead to this one family of five. Because if your eye offends you, you pluck it out. That's what he says.
Yeah, they aren't your eye.
That's what I'm
they
saying.
They aren't your eye. Pluck out your own goddamn eye, Jeffrey.
That's not what Jesus was meaning, Jeffrey.
Bring you the spoon and you can just scoop it on out.
I just want to add to this. I understand like cherry picking has its uses.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus cherry picked. He said, so you've heard it said, but I say, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He did that all the time, which was great. But it was more so whatever you could do for your own self, you know, how you could better yourself versus trying to fix somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You point out the splinter, there's a log in your eye, bud, kind of thing. So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just want to say, cherry picking is not inherently bad, but in this form, this is not right. So, in 1989, they have gathered a lot of weapons and ammo. They are really good with these military drills. They are in full preparation mode for sacrifice and for the impending war that will come as a result of this blood atonement sacrifice.
Oh, my God.
This is the worst.
Yeah, it is.
This is the fucking worst. So,
I don't like him at all.
In the background, the FBI is still involved, but they can't get enough evidence from the informants, Shar and Kevin, to justify the warrant. So, Kevin and Shar, even though they left the cult, they're still in contact with some people in the cult. So they're hearing bits and pieces of like what's happening behind closed doors. So they're...
I'm sorry. Shouldn't this have been one person telling this story was enough to get a fucking warrant? And now you have two people. So like you have the same shit coming at you from two people cooperating evidence, even though it's circumstantial, at least a fucking goddamn warrant.
See, I'm with you.
So confused.
I think if multiple people are bringing something forward, it should justify a warrant, but whatever.
Yes.
But they still assemble a task force, and they do swarm the property on April 18th of 89, just to scare them. They can't actually go inside. They don't have warrants still, but they want to give them a good shakeup. into giving up whatever the plan was, because they are still under the assumption that this is for the temple. They do not know about the plan for the Averys.
Oh.
They do not know that there is a plan for the Averys. They're thinking we need to prevent something happening at the temple.
So, because both of them left prior to the change of plans.
They're getting bits and pieces, but they're not getting the full story from everybody. Mm-hmm. So Jeffrey sends all of the men into, they have a barn on the property. He sends them in the barn and he says, dig up a large pit for me. On April 12th, Alice and Jeffrey have dinner with the Avery family. They make niceties. They catch up. Everything's great. Jeffrey even bounces their youngest kid on his knee and is all like playing with her and stuff. Like everything's great. The Averys do not know what's planned for them. They're just having a good old family dinner with their mom and dad.
I don't like this. I don't like this at all.
April 17th, Jeffrey purchases a hotel room in the Averys' names and purchases a stun gun. At 11:30 that morning, Jeffrey picks up the family to take them for brunch at the farm, and then they all swing by the hotel so that they can be seen by witnesses and drop off some of the family's bags. So the family thinks that they're going on a little getaway. He's like, we wanted to treat you guys. You worked so hard, you know? So let me take you to brunch, and then, you know, we'll take you back to the hotel and everything. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. Yeah. Around 6 p.m., the family, all of them, arrive back at the farm. The Johnsons, Alice and Alice's three youngest children, leave the farm.
Okay.
So Alice, the three youngest kids, and then the Johnsons family. I'm not sure how many of them there were. I think it may have just been the two, just the couple.
Okay.
They leave the farm because they do not want to be near the killings. The rest of the men in the cult, they go to the barn while the Averys and all the women in the cult are in the house. And they're like washing dishes and like chatting it up and whatever. It's just, it's business as usual, you know?
Oh, no.
So Ron Love, one of the cult members, he is out in the barn and he comes back to the house and he's like, hey, Dennis, can you come help me in the barn? I need something. I need you to help me with something. And he's like, heck yeah, bud. So he goes out there with him. He walks into the barn and they tried to use a stun gun on him, on Dennis, but failed. So they tackle him. They bound his limbs and gagged him and threw him in the pit. And he was shot to death.
Oh.
As he's being shot, or before he's shot, one of the members revs a chainsaw to mask the gunshot, so you don't hear what's happening.
Oh my gosh. I was just going to ask, like,
how did they not hear?
How did they not hear?
They had a plan. It was fully premeditated. The same thing.
Oh, this is so fucked up.
So they decided to do the same thing to Cheryl, the wife. So Ron comes out. He's like, hey, your husband needs you out here. Can you come help us with this? And she's like, heck yeah, baby. She goes out there. Same thing. They try to use the stun gun on her. It does not work. They're not good with the stun gun, I guess.
They are not.
Or it's just an ineffective. I'm not sure exactly.
It's probably user error. Probably. I'm just going to go with user error.
Either way, they do the same thing. They bind her up, gag her, throw her in the pit, shoot her.
God.
Trina, who is 15 and the oldest Avery child, was led to the barn. She was told that they would play a game. Hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. They tape and bind her in that order. And then they shoot her in the back.
So she thinks she's playing a game.
They think that, yeah, she thinks it's a game. So hear no evil, tape around the ears.
Yes.
See no evil, tape around the eyes.
Tape around the eyes.
Speak no evil, tape around the mouth. Becky, 13, and Karen, 6, were both led to the barn in the hopes of seeing horses. So Ron Love comes out and he's like, hey, we have horses out here. Your mom and dad and sister are out here. Y'all need to come out and see the horses. Becky went in first. They played the same game, same thing, and she was shot twice. Karen, the six-year-old, she was given a piggyback ride to the barn where they played the same game, and Karen was shot twice.
Oh my God, these are children.
I don't know how they slept at night. Because like, so Karen, the youngest, actually got suspicious when she was out there. She got scared in the middle of playing the game. And they're like, no, no, it's okay. It's all good. You know, like they're just, they goofed off with her for a little bit, made her feel better. Like that's truly evil when you can.
That's so fucking evil.
Yeah. And all in the name of what?
Whatever think, fucking beliefs they have, fucking warped as shit.
It's literally a human sacrifice. This is
literally an entire family.
So after they shot them all in the pit, the men poured lime over the bodies. Then they covered it with rocks and refilled the hole with dirt and a lot of trash. Which is just insulting.
So insulting.
They like, did it to cover the smell.
Yeah. It's like the Alexis Badger, Andrea Bowman case. She was buried with
insult
fucking
to injury.
Diapers.
Like, just another kick in the teeth. So Alice actually went to the hotel and collected the Avery's things and did the whole, like, checkout thing. While she was there, she retrieved a piece of paper that Karen, the youngest, had drawn for her. And it said, "I love you, Alice."
Yeah, and you just murdered them. But I know you didn't pull the trigger, but you fucking knew
it
was happening.
No, she knew about
Alice.
It. She's, yeah, very much still part of the conspiracy.
So, like, come here, I want to shit on you now. It's time for you to get shit on again.
I swear to God. So, the next day, police and FBI arrive unaware of the Avery's murders. The members denied all of the Temple Atonement plans, and easily so, because they had abandoned those plans. So, when the police left, they all packed up and ran to Virginia to hide out.
Wow.
They packed up everybody and ran. Jeffrey says God told him that he was pleased with the sacrifice and he was now immortal, God of the earth. That's right. You heard it here. Jeffrey Lundgren, immortal.
I fucking can't with these people.
I never heard this man's name until I got this case. You're not that important.
You are not immortal, you waffle.
Jeffrey then makes Tanya Patrick, which is another one of the cult members, his second wife.
Okay. Now we're getting into...
We're taking a turn. So he obviously feels no guilt, or like he doesn't think twice about what they all just did. He orders the women to also begin doing intercession dances, is what he calls them. It's a striptease.
I knew it.
It's just a striptease. What's wrong with him?
Everything. You list it. That's what's wrong with him. That and everything else. Wow.
He's not done, though. So he then decides, I don't like Tanya anymore. I'm going to take Kathy Johnson. The Johnsons that left, he takes that wife instead. He's like, I want her as a second wife instead. So he throws away Tanya. And he's like, I'll take Kathy.
Oh my God.
Mainly too because, oh my God, this is so gross. So like during one of the like intercession dances, Kathy, like after she strips for him, he like goes to have sex with her. And he says, when I saw her vagina, I had seen it before, like in a dream, like her specific vagina. And he was like, that's supposed to be my wife. What?
Oh, shut the fuck up. Shut all the way the fuck up. I saw your vagina.
Like,
your vagina is my vagina.
What is he on?
What the fuck? He is on something very strong.
Remember, though, that Alice, she couldn't even stand for him to, like, look at porn or anything. So...
Yeah.
I'm sure you're wondering, how
is she justifying this?
She's not. She was present for all of this and made to watch. She ended up leaving him and moving back in with her parents.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Alice, but this is the thing that made you leave him?
Murder!
This is the fucking thing that made you leave him. He shit on you and you didn't leave. He murdered people. An entire family. He murdered children and he didn't leave. Oh, you've put your dick in another woman's vagina? I'm gone. What the hell?
Well, unfortunately, she also started self-medicating with alcohol and over-the-counter meds. So,
well, yeah. I probably would too.
Honestly, it tracks. So, as time was passing, the cult was falling apart. Everybody started leaving. After Alice, and Jeffrey didn't try to stop it as the thing. He seemed like he was done too. He told everyone, like, stay put here in Virginia, get jobs. We'll just reassess this all in the spring.
Okay.
What? Like, meeting adjourned, our guys. Cults. Good job.
Our cult's taking a vacay.
Pretty much. They were all on sabbatical. So Jeffrey takes his family to California. So that means Kathy Johnson and then kids.
Where's Kathy's husband?
I don't know.
What's going on here, guys?
So he takes all of that family to California for the winter. The former cult members, though, the ones that he left in Virginia, they are heavy laden with guilt. They now are seen through the lies. The further you distance yourself from the abuser, the more clearly you see. And they see that they were wrong. And the fact that they aren't holy, they are murderers. So they turn themselves in on December 31st, 1989. Collectively, everybody turns themselves in, except Jeffrey.
Wow. That was the year before I was born.
They also provided a map where the Avery's bodies were and dug up all of the bodies. Well, they didn't. The police dug up all of the bodies January 3rd, 1990. And based on dental records, they were all confirmed as the Avery's. So, and they were able to get all of the pieces. So that was good.
This was not that long ago.
It wasn't.
I'm only 34. And they discovered their bodies the year I was born. So this is less than 30. This is almost 35 years old.
Oh God. Isn't that wild to think about? That's not even a lifetime ago. That's
no.
Well, 13 warrants end up going out for the cult members involved. And everyone spilled everything. They were all turning on Jeffrey super hard. So everyone ended up having to, you know, go to court. And
rightfully
they all pled guilty to their charges, except
good
Jeffrey.
Of course he didn't.
Even Alice pled guilty. Everybody pled guilty except Jeffrey.
He's too narcissistic to plead guilty.
Yeah. So Jeffrey, he had to go to trial. Before trial, he had to have that psych eval that everyone has to have, apparently, and was diagnosed with severe personality disorder. Let me give you some information on this. So I looked up severe personality disorder, but I believe that was a blanket term at the time.
Yeah, I was about to say, also, this is the 90s.
Yeah, we've got them broken up in a couple of different things. So the two that stuck out are histrionic personality disorder. People with this disorder may be dramatic, have strong emotions, and seek excessive attention from others. Narcissistic personality disorder. People with this disorder may lack empathy and believe they are superior to others and seek admiration. So these are the two that I narrowed down from the list of the severe personality disorders that it looks like he ticks the boxes for. So
yeah,
pretty
what'd
sure.
I say? He's too narcissistic to plead guilty.
Yep, that's it.
What do you know?
He actually gave sermons at the trial.
No, he did. He fucking did. I know it.
I don't understand how this why they let him, because it's not like a 30-minute deal. He spoke for 5 hours.
This is my only guess, is that if they denied him the ability to whatever or to speak, and it maybe it was more of like this, they were permitting him to speak, not giving him permission to give a sermon. He just took the opportunity to give the sermon, but they can't deny him the opportunity to speak, because if they do, it could be an appeal for him to get a new trial. And so they're just trying to follow the law.
So they just had to let it happen? Oh my God, that's so fucking annoying. That judge must have been, I'm regretting every career decision I've ever fucking made.
Right? And everybody on that jury, shoot me now.
So let me just give you all of the sentences for everyone. Let me...
Please tell me. It tell is you, life in prison.
Everyone that played every part. I'll tell you everyone's part in this. So...
Okay.
Or everyone that I could find that was charged. So, Greg Winship was the person that ran the chainsaw during all the murders. And he was sentenced to 15 years to life in prison. And he was paroled after 20 years. He is out.
Not long enough.
Sharon Blunchley, one of the women in the house, was sentenced to 25 years and paroled after 20. She is out.
Wow.
Richard Brand, he duct taped and bound the Averys and received 15 years to life, but paroled after 19 years. He is out. Dennis and...
that one makes me mad.
I also have feelings about that. Yeah. Dennis and Tanya Patrick, that were just in the cult, but not on the farm. Like, they were in the house. They were acquitted. Dennis and Tanya Patrick were in the cult, but not on the farm. They didn't live at the farm.
Okay.
Remember the Johnsons and Alice left? They didn't, the Patricks didn't have to leave because they didn't live there.
They didn't live there. Okay.
Yeah, they were acquitted.
Okay.
Debbie Elevarez, which I believe is also the cousin of Jeffrey.
Oh. Wow.
She was another woman in the house, sentenced to 25 years and served 21. She is out.
Okay, I'm sorry. What the fuck did she do to get 21 years? When the other guy bound the fucking people and he got 19, or 19. He only spent 19 years.
He only served 19.
This is, I'm like, this is so fucked up. Like, I'm not saying that she deserves less. What I'm saying is he deserves more.
More.
This is fucking stupid.
I agree with you. I am also kind of confused about how all the sentencing, like, years are decided. If any of you guys are curiosity consultants, if you guys could weigh in.
Right.
The nerd side of the internet, please tell me.
I could be wrong. And we should probably Google this and learn more about it since we are a true crime podcast. But I think what it is like there are certain charges. So depending on what they are charged with, based off the laws that are in place at the time. So it depends on like how many years that person can get, and they can be sentenced, like these people have been sentenced for like 15 years to life. Like you have to serve 15. You can't get less than that unless you get like a deal or something like that. But then you can go up to life depending on if you're granted parole based off of good behavior and XYZ. And then also I think a lot of places it's you have to go off of the laws that are in place at the time the crime is committed. So like if you commit a murder in 1970, but you're not charged until 2020,
you have to go off
the laws that were in place in 1970. And a lot of times it's shorter sentences than what is established nowadays for like
that's wild.
Those kinds of crimes. Yeah.
All right. Well, Susan Love, which was Ron Love's wife. The guy that was escorting them back and forth from the barn and house. Susan Love, she was another woman in the house, sentenced to 25, paroled on 20 years, and she's out. Kathy Johnson, the second wife, for real second wife, she spent only 1 year in prison for obstruction of justice.
That's fucking dumb.
I don't get that. Daniel Kraft was the one lowering the Averys into the pit. He was sentenced to 50 years and paroled this year.
What?
Yeah.
That's crazy. At least he got 50.
Like, welcome home, Daniel Kraft.
Yeah, right?
It's going to be a really horrible life.
Oh, yeah, it is. The today's world outside prison versus when he went in. Oh, culture shock, my friend.
So the last couple of ones I'm going to go into are the ones that are the heaviest sentences with the, I don't want to say the worst crimes because... all of these are horrible, but whatever.
Yeah. Well, Craig, before you go into these, I just want to make the... I noticed this as you're going through the cases or the whatever it's called, the sentences. The girls in the case got harsher sentences than the men.
Yes.
And I'm like,
I don't know. You
guys were out there in the barn present
doing
for the murders.
It.
The women were inside. They're all fucking guilty as shit.
For sure. Yeah,
but there shouldn't be a discrepancy on, and if there is, it should be more for the people that were actually in the fucking barn committing the murders.
I'd like to make you a judge, Lacey.
I would.
I like your line of thinking.
That would be interesting to be a judge.
All right. So Alice Lundgren was sentenced to 150 years in prison, no possibility of parole. Damon, their oldest child, the oldest Lundgren child, assisted with the binding and duct taping, was sentenced to 100 years, no possibility of parole.
Whoa.
Ron Love, he's the one that lured the victims to the barn, was sentenced to 170 years. Jeffrey Lundgren, finally.
Mm, the mastermind.
The god of earth, immortal, sentenced to death and executed on October 24th, 2006, and he is dead.
Am I clapping for that? Abso-fucking-lutely I am. Wow, 16 years. He spent 16 years on death row before he died.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what prison was like for him.
I hope it was awful.
I'm sure it was. I bet he tried to preach at people.
I was about to say I hope he got pegged, but I think he'd like that, so.
Oh, God. Well, that is it. That is part two.
Wow.
That concludes the case. Rest in peace to the Avery family.
Yes.
So sorry that all of you guys got wrapped up in the wrong thing, you know? And it wasn't your fault what happened to you.
That was a wild case.
Honestly, I think if the FBI had more informants, or if those informants maybe had like gone back, I'm not saying that would have been the best option, but if they had been more in the know, maybe it could have been prevented. But
I don't understand why the cop went back, went to the property in the first place after getting such a heavy accusation. And I don't understand how they didn't get a warrant, a search warrant, after two corroborating people came forward.
Mm-hmm.
That's, shouldn't that be enough? I guess I'm wrong, but curiosity consultants, let us know, because I'm confused. I just feel like that should justify a warrant.
This is why I'm saying Lacey for judge. Can we, do you vote judges?
No, you don't.
How do you become a judge?
You okay. Don't. Vote
so,
for judges.
Are you ready for palate cleansers?
I am.
Because I am.
Okay, my palate cleanser, because this is coming out around Christmas time. I am going to make fun of Lola for a second.
Oh my God.
Because Lola comes in, we're getting ready to record this one. She comes in with a new sweater, and I'm like, this is okay. Such a cute sweater. And it says Griswold. Does it say Griswold Farm or Griswold and Co. And I could tell that it was like Christmas trees underneath it. So I start laughing. I'm like, oh my gosh, I love your sweater. And she's like, yeah, I got it. It's cute. I have no idea what it means. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? You don't know what this means? I said, stand up. And so I'm looking at her sweater. It says Griswold and Co. And it's got Christmas trees on it. And then at the very bottom, it says it's a beaut. Or what does it say at the bottom?
A real beaut guaranteed.
A real beaut guaranteed. And I'm like, oh my gosh. I was like, Lola, have you never seen National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation? She's like, what? I was like, girl. She introduces me to music. I am the music virgin that she introduces good stuff to me.
And I pop that cherry. No, sorry.
And I introduce her to all of the good movies and shows, minus Bob's Burgers.
She mostly introduces me to a lot of crying, emotional films that like heal my inner child. And I fucking hate it, but I love it too.
Oh, yeah. I made her watch Inside Out.
I cried.
And she cried. And then we watched.
And then I cried again at her house.
We watched, what did we watch? Home. Oh, we watched Home. That was a good one. That was a good one. Yeah. So now.
Yeah, come into the out now. I know what that means.
Yep. And so I've told her, you have to watch National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Christmas Vacation. I know. And I'm like saying all of the lines and she doesn't get it. And I'm like, well, shitter's full. And she's like, I don't know.
I say, okay, that's get a plunger. Are you okay? What'd you eat?
You have to watch it. It's so chaotic, but so good. Oh my gosh. It's like stupid chaotic. It's pretty hilarious.
I like those kind of things.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. What's yours?
Let's hear from the Good News Network.
Da-da!
Girl submits drawing to upgrade playground for little kids, and the city took her advice.
Hell yeah!
A young Utah resident has had her classroom civics lessons suddenly explode into life after some crayon drawings she made of a better playground became reality. Did I say that right? I may have emphasized the wrong words, whatever. Her mom brought her to City Hall along with her drawing, and being that a new playground was already budgeted for, they followed the 11-year-old Rosalie Olson's lead. Olson, now 12, had made the drawings to sketch out what she thought would be the best playground for her and her younger sisters to play on. After seeing all the effort she put into all of those drawings, knowing we'd already ordered the playground for the park right by her house, so the next best thing is to have her involved. We checked all her boxes, got the colors right, and it was a collaborative process, and the ribbon cutting ceremony happened September 24th of this year.
Oh, it just happened.
It's really cute.
Oh my gosh.
You guys go visit the website, the Good News Network. It's very cute. She wanted like an upside down slide thing. Anyway.
That's cute. I'll have to look at it because
that's awesome.
I love that.
And her drawings are also depicted on there too.
Oh, I love it. Mm. That's pretty freaking cool.
That's so sweet.
So cute.
I love Good News. That's the good news.
That's the good news from the Good News Network. Now back to you, Sam.
What?
I don't know who Sam is.
Okay. I was like, are we adding to the team? I wasn't informed. Did you see me?
I did not. I left you out of this one completely.
Well, that's all. And now I'm ready to go eat some soup.
Nummy food. Yeah. Nummy food. All right. We'll see you guys next week. It'll be our last episode for 2024. We're coming to the end of 2024.
Wait, before we end though, I just want to say this has been such a good year.
It has been a good year.
Thank you guys so much for supporting us.
By the time you guys listen to this, Lola is going to be a married woman.
Oh, God. That's right.
Yes.
I'm going to be wifed up. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're coming down to the end. We just want to thank everybody real quick before we go. I'll let you guys know that we are going to have a dark week. We are going to have a dark week every year in the summer, one in the summer and one at Christmas time. So this year, our dark week is December 24th. So that is Christmas Eve. So we will be on dark week that week. So there'll be no episode, but there will be one the week before and the week after. So.
And the Potty Podcast also.
Yes.
Is still running. So go over there.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, yep. If you've listened to all of our stuff for Deadly Faith, go join the Potty Podcast.
Yes.
$5 a month. It's
go get
amazing.
You some.
We literally talk about anything. We do collaborative things with you guys.
We love
talk
it.
To you guys. It's amazing. Thank you for being part of the community.
Yes, we just created a deconstruction playlist for you guys to have access to.
That's a good one.
So fun. Such good songs on there. Oh, go check it out.
And with that, stay safe, stay skeptical,
and steer clear of the cultish carousel.
Bye.
We interrupt this episode with a message from our sponsor. If you've ever deconstructed your faith, you know it's not easy. But just imagine if you could have people to guide you through the process.
That's right. People like Jim Palmer, Kristen Dumez, author of Jesus and John Wayne, Jennifer Knapp, Brad Jerzak, Brian Zond, Paul Young, author of The Shack, and more. Well, if you head over to choiracademy.com and register for Square 2 using the promo code LOLA, you'll get 10% off the regular registration cost of this awesome course and community just for being a fan of our show.
All links can be found in the show notes. Again, that's code LOLA, L-O-L-A, for 10% off the Square 2 course. Also, heathens, if you're enjoying the show so far, please like, subscribe, do all of the things because I love you and you love me and we're just one big happy family. And if you know where that came from, we're all cringing in unison. Deadly Faith is brought to you by Choircast Network. It is produced by Lacey Bean and Lola Robbins and audio engineered by Eric Howe. Thanks for listening.